Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program is brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com.
This is Chef Emily Peterson, host of Sharp and Hot. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good evening and welcome to
Ferment About It
on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm your host, Mary Izette. Chris Guzman is not here tonight. It's so weird to do this intro by myself. Anyway, this is a weekly show about all things fermented. We're archived on HeritageRadioNetwork.org as well as Stitcher and iTunes. Welcome to our 102nd episode. So I don't have any announcements. Holidays are coming up. New Year's coming up. There's a lot of stuff that will be going on towards the beginning of the year. There's several. If you're a local New York City fermentationist or home brewer, there are several benefits that will be going on that are open to the public. So it's a great chance to taste some local homebrew and for a good cause. So I know that the Staten Island Brew Clubs are doing one on Staten Island. I don't even have the dates for this. And then there's going to be one on Brunity, but we'll announce those at the beginning of the year. And then there's, of course, the annual New York City Homebrew Alley homebrew competition that will be coming up in February. So more to come in the new year. Anyway, I'm joined in the studio tonight by Bob Slanzy and Chris Kolk. Hi, guys.
Hello. Hi.
And Bob, you've been here on the show before.
Yes, I have.
This is Chris's first time. So these guys, you guys are both in Westchester County.
Correct.
So I know you through, the New York City Homebrewers Guild, you guys have come down
right.
to that
we've
before.
Been to your club meetings.
Yeah, and then the Westchester Homebrewers Organization, which I've been to, and you guys are very active members of. So we were hanging out at a holiday party recently, and I didn't realize that you guys brew together as much as you do. So I love the dynamics of what you guys do together to brew and where you came from and where you are now and where you're going. So I just wanted to do a buddy brewing and talk about collaborative brewing. So let's get some background. So Bob, tell the audience a little bit about yourself.
I live in Westchester. I'm a beekeeper. I make all my own honey. And 2 years ago, Homebrew Alley, I took Best of Show with Ghost Pepper Mead. And in that time, I started to brew at Melavino. And my
Tell
ghost
us about
pepper,
Melavino
is New Jersey's first meadery. And Sergio at Melavino took second place in the 2014 Homebrew Alley.
Okay.
And he's an awesome brewer. He has awesome stuff coming out. And we're going to do a couple collaborative brews with him down there. My Ghost Pepper Mead is going to be released this early spring. Or late winter, February, March. I'm not sure exactly when, but, you can't rush it. When it's ready, it's ready. And I walked into Westchester Homebrewers about 4 or 5 years ago as a beekeeper. I made my first cider. And I met Chris then, but we really didn't really start getting together for about another year and a half, 2 years.
So how long have you been keeping bees?
This is probably going into my sixth season.
And how many hives do you currently have?
I have four.
Four, okay. So how many pounds of honey did you get this year?
I took 600 this year, or 400.
It's a lot.
Well, I'm also vice president of the Beekeepers Club. And I'm very active in that. And I got Chris active. And that's when we really started to hang out, was when Chris told me he wanted to keep bees too.
All right, so Chris, how long have you been? Tell me about yourself. How long you've been homebrewing and...
Well, I started homebrewing probably 15 to 16 years ago, and I just started with kits. My wife bought me a Mr. Beer kit, the absolutely most horrendous beer that could possibly ever be made. I took one taste of it and I said, there is no freaking way that I could make anything that tasted this bad. So I went out and I got some books and I got some real buckets and some real equipment, and I started to brew real beer out of extract kits, and that lasted for about 3 or 4 years, and I got better and better and better brews. And I think I brought a beer that's probably 12 years old. It got lost in the shuffle in the back, and Bobby came over. I'm making beer with Bob, and we're making all this stuff, and I haven't bottled for at least 12 years. So I know
you're all keg.
I'm all kegged at this point. And then I start a couple of years ago brewing with Bobby, and now it's bottles. I hate freaking bottles. So now I'm clearing shelves trying to find stuff, and we found a couple of bottles of old beer, which we could try. So
we're going to pop one open right now. They're mystery bottles, no label whatsoever.
No, absolutely lost in the shuffle, and has to probably be extract brew.
And so then when did you start going to the WHO meetings?
I started a few months after the WHO originated. I saw signs up at the homebrew shop, so I walked in. And I said to my wife, hey, you know, there's a place up in Pleasantville that's a homebrew place. And she encouraged me, go, get out of the house. So off I went, and I met the guys there. And just by joining the club, it stepped up my brewing, oh, my God, 100-fold. Because I met these guys with these awesome brews, and you started to talk about, oh, how do you mixing? What are you putting in? How hard are you? How long are you fermenting it? What temperatures? I had no idea that had so much to do with it.
Right.
And then I got right into to all grain brewing, and I haven't looked back since. I met Bobby, as Bobby mentioned before. He had bees. He said, hey, you want to see my hives? I got intrigued. He said, you want some bees this coming spring? I said, absolutely. So now I'm on my third year of beekeeping. Awesome. I have two hives. I actually got three going, and I gave one to my other friends because there were just way too many bees in the backyard. And I pulled this year about 400 pounds of honey off of two hives on my third year of beekeeping.
Awesome.
So it's been a lot of fun.
That's great. I love it because, Bobby, you really came from a bee mead background. And then, Chris, you came from a homebrewing beer background. And then you guys have, you know, Bobby, you brew beer now. And because you're keeping beads and making mead. So it's cool. So how is this beer?
Very good.
I'm going to have to try some.
You have to finish what's in front of you first.
So let's talk about how did you guys, what was your, do you remember your first brew together?
I don't know.
That's pretty tough. I know we would sit down, and I have a little home bar in the basement, and we'd hang out there drinking all kinds of crazy beers and coming up with stupid ideas of what kind of beers would be really good. Well, and the one night we said, well, what were we going to brew next? And it was near the holidays. And we were just, as a goof, we said, let's brew a fruitcake stout.
And I think you had made one that day, and the house smelled like it. And it was like fruitcake. And I was like, shit, we can make a beer like that.
So, So we started kicking it around. And Bobby's so great with ingredients. I mean, Bobby's just got this nose for ingredients and what'll mix and what won't mix. And I think that's what's so much fun, you know, collaborating with Bobby all the time is... We come up with an idea, and then he'll nick some of my ideas. But between the two of us, we come up with a recipe that really is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And it steps it up. I mean, now I have to step up my brewing because I have to keep Bobby happy and make sure the stuff comes out good. Otherwise, it's
we
trouble.
Don't do any little stuff. It's all 1080 and up.
Yeah, and what size is this? Tell us about your system that you guys are brewing on together.
My system is... a couple of recycled beer kegs, the old style oval ones, the old Budweiser kegs. I cut holes in the top of them, so they're that system. I found a big brew pot. I went to a recycling place, and I found this huge pot. I was actually looking for a keg, and the guy said, "Oh no, go around the corner. You'll find this big pot." And I found a 20.
Wait, so what? This is like what kind of recycling place?
It's called Vulcan. It's in Stamford, Connecticut.
Okay.
And you bring in scrap metal, but he saves all the good stuff and resells it. So he said, "Go. There's a pot around the corner." And I said, "Well, what do you want for it?" He goes, "Oh, I don't know. Like, give me $100 or something for it, or $80. I forgot what he actually charged me." So I take the pot. It's like a, what is it? A
27 gallon
pot. It's a 100-liter pot, so it's 27 gallons. I bring it over to the club for a big brew day, and our club is sponsored by Scott Vaccaro's Captain Lawrence. Mm-hmm. And Scott looks at me and says, "Where'd you get that pot?" "Well, you know, I got it at Vulcan, you know, you like it?" He goes, "That was my pot."
Really?
It was really his pot. He said, "I got that pot when I was working for a Sierra Nevada brewery. And I sent it to a place in Port Chester, have a new fitting welded into it. And I kept going back, and the place was out of business."
So he
patted me on the shoulder and said, "Good luck with the pot." And
at least now he can know. I mean, regardless, I'm sure he, you know, rues the loss of that. But at least he knows it has a good home.
And it has. And I think I got good luck from the pot. Yeah. So the pot's a lot.
So let's talk about this fruitcake stout, because you guys recently made it again, right?
Yes,
we made it. So what the heck is a fruitcake stout?
Well,
also, by the way, I have to tell you that I'm drinking this 12-year-old beer, and it is delicious. I don't know what it was originally, but it's very much like, it's dead. It is pretty flat, but it's like old ale, barley wine, nicely.
I think it's kind of like barley wine-ish.
Yeah, I do too.
I would definitely say that. If I had to enter it, I'd drink
it.
So
lesson is,
wine.
If you're going to brew these big beers, put a couple bottles back and see if you can hang on to them.
Well, that was the whole point of us bottling all the time, because mm-hmm. Chris has the bar in his basement. So whatever he puts in a keg is going to be on tap. And don't get me wrong, we all want to drink great stuff.
Right. But these kind of beers.
How often do you want to have a pint of something that's 13.2?
Right.
It's just, you know.
Plus, it's good to save a few bottles. Are you saving bottles now of some of the stuff you guys are currently making?
Yeah. I have to now.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That makes me feel good.
Yeah, we emptied a barrel yesterday. We had a 5-gallon rum barrel with the red wheat wine in it, and that one really came out nice. We did a red wheat wine with red blanched wheat. You remember what else was in there?
No,
I don't remember.
I have to have open up my phone.
Some honey,
but then it would start ringing in the show here. That wouldn't be good.
Yeah, I remember some honey malts. Some came to like 35 pounds. Then we put 6 pounds of honey on top of it, and we did it with wine yeast. Then we put it in a barrel, and totally different. You know, nice sipper. Not something that's ever going to win a contest, but.
Well, don't
something
say
that's
that.
Very different.
There's lots of new categories that are.
But getting back to that fruitcake.
Yeah,
we,
tell
we
us about the
actually,
fruitcake.
We sat down. I went upstairs as we're sitting there drinking heavily that night, and I found the cookbook, and I pulled down all the different fruit that you really put into a fruitcake: the dates, the figs, the raisins, the citron, the.
And we used black currant.
Black currant, some cloves. And we put them all in a pot, mashed them down, and just made a...
Steeped them.
So you basically made like a fruitcake tea.
Correct.
With all this fruit and spices and everything.
And there's probably at least 6 pounds of dried fruit in there, which works out well because of all
For how big of a batch?
We made 10 gallons.
10 gallons.
The first time around.
Correct.
Yep. Okay.
And I think our gravity was somewhere in the neighborhood of the 1120s. And we took it all the way down to the 1020s. So it was a nice big beer. And what I did notice, though, is the fruit really didn't stay. When we first did it, the fruit was very crisp and clean and fresh. And now it's sort of getting muddled. And it's only, how long ago was that?
That was last year.
It was that old.
Mm-hmm.
So now the fruit is really taking a back seat and the malt's coming up front. But... You know, hey, it is what it is. It's a learning experience.
And did you guys just rebrew that?
We just rebrewed it. We were trying to duplicate it for the most part. We changed the recipe just a little bit. We had a whole bunch of people over at the house watching us brew it. And we got a little bit distracted. So I don't think we boiled it down.
No.
So we didn't get the gravity that we were looking for. I think we wound up with 1080 or 1070, something like that. So we're not going to have that huge beer.
Right.
But we should have really taken the 15 gallons and boiled it down to 10 or 11. And I think we only boiled a couple of gallons off of it. So we didn't get that nice concentrated boil.
But you'll have more beer.
Yeah.
So
right.
did you just do it like a basic Imperial Stout kind of recipe?
I would say so, yeah.
Yeah.
And then definitely. What yeast are you guys using?
We used Edinburgh yeast in it.
Yep.
And it just went, it ripped straight through. You didn't have to baby it or...
Oh, no. That
actually, the Edinburgh, we took off something else.
The first one, we took
okay.
it off
so
of something else.
So you used a fresh yeast cake.
Okay. Yeah, that was it. We took the yeast off the Wee Heavy and did the fruitcake with it.
Okay.
That's right.
So which makes it makes it a lot of fun. You pull it. This time we bought some fresh yeast and ran it on that. You know, we make it up. I made up a 500 milliliter starter. It took me about a week to build it up. You know, every other night I'd pour another quart of wort into it and mm-hmm. just let it go.
Right.
Put it in the hot box, and we had a real good slurry. So when we poured it into the jugs, it went.
Chris has a great system. He cans with the canning jars.
Right.
All of his wort.
Yeah.
So he does it for starters.
That's great. So tell us about this, actually, because I have another friend that does this as well. I don't personally do it, but I know that people do. So tell us a little bit about
really
that.
So it's really easy. All I do is I grab a whole bunch of canning jars. My canning pot holds 8 quarts.
Okay.
I take 3/4 of a cup of dry DME, dried malt extract. I usually use something light. I pour that into each of the quarts, and I fill them up with water. Warm water, hot water. I put the lids on them, screw them down lightly, drop them in the canning pot, come back an hour later after it's at a rolling boil, take them out, and they seal themselves, and it's good for probably a year.
And then are you keeping those in the fridge? Or?
Oh, absolutely not.
They're
sitting right on
the shelf.
Stable. Yeah,
okay.
They're fine. They've
Great.
Been totally preserved.
So then when you get ready to do your starter, you basically are just taking one of those.
I'm washing the lid off, sanitizing it.
Mm-hmm.
And then just pouring it into whatever I'm going to start it in.
Awesome.
And dropping the yeast in, put it in a warm box, and off we go.
What kind of warm box are you using?
I make a box that holds 2 carboys out of a foam board,
mm-hmm.
and I just tape it together, make a little door for it, and hang a light bulb in it with a thermostat, and that's all it takes. People worry about the light striking it. But number one, there's no hops
right,
in there.
If you're using for starter.
And number two, it's not a fluorescent bulb, so an incandescent bulb isn't going to affect your beer anyway.
Okay. On that note, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back with more Buddy Brewing on Foment About It.
Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Are you a locavore? Our Northeast regional forager for Whole Foods Market sure is. She spends her time traveling around the New York City metro area sourcing the best new or interesting artisanal and handcrafted local products for our purchasing teams at the local store level. Part of our commitment to our local suppliers includes assisting them with the process of getting their products sold at our stores. Whether it's suggesting packaging designs, pricing, or distribution methods, she's helping some of the area's best new products reach savvy shoppers at Whole Foods Market stores. Today, New York. Tomorrow, the world. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com.
Welcome back to Foment About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm here with Bob Slanzy and Chris Kolk, and we are talking about collaborative brewing and all kinds of stuff. So let's talk about beekeeping and mead. So how did you get into beekeeping, Bobby?
Across the street from my mother's house, there's a guy who was like my second father. You know, I hung out with his sons. He had 2 sons, 1 year older, 1 year younger. And I always got along with him, and he started keeping bees. And he was into it about 2 years. I went with him, just like Chris, and I caught it. And, you know, then I got my first hive, and then I went from 1 hive to 2 hives the next year, and then I went to 4 hives. And, you know, then I started going to different clubs, the beekeeping clubs, and the New York City club. I went there once, and then I, you know, you got to go where you fit in.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really like the times for the New York City club. So I started going to a club in Northeast New Jersey at Ramapo College.
Okay.
And I eventually became the vice president there, and I started dragging Chris there. And that was it.
Again, some of those brew buddy things. You know, he drives, I pay the tolls.
Yes.
And awesome. It makes for a good evening.
And so tell me about it. So how you started. You basically...
Bobby said to me in one winter, do you want to try? So... He gave me a list of equipment to buy, which was basically a hive. And he said, I'll give you what they call a nuke, which is just five frames of bees in a box. And I brought them home, and I put them into the hive.
So you ordered them, or you got them from...
No, Bobby gave them to me.
Okay.
And we started a young hive. They made their own queen, which is really cool.
Yeah.
And, you know, it took off, and I got the bug to keep the bees. And it's so cool, because the bees are... For me, to watch a colony of bees and it's all for one, just all the bees are working just for the hive.
Mm-hmm.
And you get into their life cycle. And Bobby taught me so much about the life cycle. Bobby should, you know, you should talk about, you know, how the bees, worker bees, you know, how they start.
There's just so much. You know, we spoke about this last time. And, you know, the worker bees live for 21 days, you know, 21 days in the incubation period. And in summer, they only live for 7 weeks till they're... Basically, their wings fall off. Half their life is spent inside the hive. Half is spent outside the hive.
And collecting pollen?
Collecting pollen and nectar. And that nectar's come back and processed. Enzymes are added, and then it's brought down to below 18% moisture, and that's what becomes honey from sugar water. And then, you know, the way that I listened to a guy from Indiana talk about how to harvest honey, and I taught Chris the same thing, and other people aren't getting the results and returns that we get.
Yeah,
I think the average guys at our club get about 60 pounds of honey per hive per year.
Right.
And I had two hives, and I took 400 pounds.
That's a lot.
So it's all about building up a huge colony of bees. Instead of having two boxes of bees, you have three boxes of bees. And a box of bees is, each one is, I don't know, about 18 by 24 inches roughly. To pull a number out of my head. And you start stacking those boxes up where they live. So a normal hive that our guys in our clubs are keeping two boxes, and we upped it to three because this guy in Indiana says the more bees, the better.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and duh, you got 50% more bees to go out and collect honey.
Absolutely.
And the results are fabulous. That we're, you know, the way we do it.
Yeah.
Have
you guys done a taste test of your honeys?
Oh yeah, we've tasted them all, and you know, actually our club, beekeeping club has what we call the Honey Classic every September, where it's open to the public, and everybody who's a beekeeper brings in their honey, and then we have a taste test, and you know, everybody picks the best honey. And I'm going to tell you, the dark honeys win every year. It's not the light honeys, it's not those beautiful floral honeys, it's not the locust honey, it's not, you know, the linden honey, and they're absolutely wonderful. But those dark honeys, I don't know if it's visual or it's actually the taste, they win every year.
Yeah.
They have a special, almost caramelized, and maybe that's the part that you're thinking about, you know? Oh, my God, it's dark. It's more caramel.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? It's a rarity. We don't see it at all. I don't see any.
So we also just went to the Who's annual holiday party on Saturday, and Chris, you brought two braggots.
I did.
So have you been making mead and braggot?
What I do is every time I brew beer, I have a big enough system that I can brew a minimum of 10 or 15 gallons. So on a day when I'm really going, I make a 15-gallon batch. So the first batch gets...
You split it up into 5 gallons.
I split into fives. Mm-hmm. I make splits. So one might get an English ale yeast, one might get an American ale yeast, and then the third one is always going to get 6 pounds of honey put into it. And that makes it a braggot, because it's 50% fermentables from the honey.
Right.
So it really... is a lot of fun to make those, and they take a lot longer to ferment out.
So when are you? So basically, for anyone out there that isn't familiar with a braggot is just a honey beer hybrid. And some people make the beer and the mead separately and then combine them, or you can add honey to your beer
The way I do it.
Right.
I think the honey in a braggot gives a crisper finish.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it definitely gives it a different dimension.
It's better than blending. That's just my opinion, but
yeah, I think they're two different animals. Yeah. But I know that, you know, people can do them both ways.
So we boil out the wort. I take the wort, and as I'm chilling it, it goes through the chiller. I have a little Chiron chiller, goes right into my fermenting vessel, and then at that point, I throw in the honey right into it. It's still warm enough that the honey dissolves. I don't do anything. I don't sanitize it. I don't boil it. I don't do any. I just dump it right in. And it's been successful.
Awesome. Yeah, you brought a traditional braggot and a black dark cherry or black cherry?
Black cherry.
Black cherry. I thought both were good, but the black cherry was outstanding. So what, from both of your perspectives, because have you been making brackets as well?
With Chris. Yeah.
So basically any braggot can be any kind of beer base. Yeah. So what have you guys found works best for a beer base for a braggot?
Well, the one that you really liked, that was a Munich wheat.
Okay.
Why I picked Munich and wheat, which are two opposite ends of the scale, to mix them up. And then I added two packages of frozen black cherries to it.
And when did you add the cherries?
The cherries went in again at the very end after everything was cooled.
Okay. So right in primary fermentation, though.
Correct.
Okay.
Yep, right into primary. So I did it with that one. And the other one that we made, the traditional that you tasted, was actually an IPA. And when they were on my tap, they had plenty of hops. But there were no hops left in it when we drank it.
By the time...
I left that still.
Yeah.
Right. We left it still. And it's really nice. It's almost brandy-like.
Yeah, I would agree. So let's go back to the collaboration. So what other beers have you guys been doing? I know you've been playing with barrels. So tell us a little bit about your barrels and where you got them. And
I got a couple from Richie at Single Cut. Richie from Single Cut had a couple experimentals.
The five-gallon size?
He had a five-gallon sour, a five-gallon rum, a six-gallon rum, and an eight-gallon whiskey.
Okay.
Right now, Stephen Durley, the winner of last year's Homebrew Alley, mm-hmm. has the six-gallon rum barrel at his house that has been soured, and he just put a second running in it. Noah Purse has the five-gallon, which me and Noah did a collaboration.
Okay.
We've been brewing sours together.
Okay, awesome.
Noah's house has the sour bugs, so we don't take anything out of Noah's house anywhere else.
Noah was pouring a very nice black sour at the Westchester Homebrewers holiday party last weekend.
We just took a lambic out of the barrel that the sour barrel is. Now, I think we don't have anything in it now. I think we're going to put something new in it. Me and him did a sour braggot, no boil braggot, which came out unbelievable. And we just stepped up the recipe. We did a 1 gallon experimental. That's going into a 5 now.
Awesome. And he has a big cool ship.
Yes, he does. 200 gallons. So Noah really is unbelievable when it comes to sours. Like, you know, he could go against anybody. I really think so. And, let me see. Then the whiskey barrel is at Chris's house. We have an oatmeal stout that's going to go in there. That probably should have went in tonight.
Coffee stout's going in there.
That's right. The coffee stout's going in. And then I have a bochette, which is going to follow the coffee stout into the whiskey barrel.
And what's a bochette for those of you?
Is caramelized honey mead.
And so you caramelize the honey first?
Yep. I boiled the honey in a pot. That one just got stuck, and we had to repitch a starter. It was at 14% alcohol at 10:48. So we made a hydromel, which was a lower gravity mead,
mm-hmm.
repitched it, made a 2-gallon batch, and then pitched that on top of the 11 gallons of bochette stuck at 10:48. That restarted the fermentation by lowering the gravity and introducing that new yeast. So that's going to go into the whiskey barrel next. And then Mr. Kuzmi lent me 2 barrels, which I think I'm going to do one with boysenberry.
Boysenberry mead.
And then the other one's going to be a black currant. And I was thinking that the boysenberry, I'm going to just put it in, pull 5, and then put another 5 in and leave it there for a while. The black currant, I was thinking of doing Solera, where I just keep the black currant mead in and then extract 5 gallons at a time and replace with 6 mm-hmm. to make up for Angel Share. And Angel Share is what evaporates off the subject in the barrel.
Right. And you guys were talking about turning one of your barrels into a bourbon barrel, right?
Yes. Well, one of the barrels, the rum flavor has gone off of it. So we were going to actually introduce rum to it. I mean, it was bourbon. Rum, but we're going to put bourbon in it.
Awesome.
Or we're going to look for something, a bourbon barrel.
Yeah, I bought the Jack Daniels last night.
Oh, okay. What are we doing
with that? Awesome.
But we also take... I have rum and oak chips, and I'm also going to put the Jack Daniels with oak chips. I store them in a jar,
mm-hmm.
and
yep.
then when I want to add something, I just take a tablespoon of oak chips and drop it in and keep tasting.
Yep, yeah, just the chips, not the liquid.
Right.
The liquid keeps all the tannins off the oak.
Yeah,
you're getting a whole different taste.
Yeah. So you're basically, you're just kind of straining some of the chips and putting those in.
Yep. Yeah.
Awesome. So what's next for you guys for collaborative brewing?
I don't know. I think we want to do that wheat wine again, but we wanted to use an ale yeast, see how that comes out. And that's one of the big things about being collaborative.
Oh, because that's what we didn't talk about. What yeast did you use on the wheat wine?
Oh, we used two different yeasts. We did a split batch. We used D47 and...
Which is a wine yeast.
Which is a white wine yeast. And 71B, which also is a white wine yeast.
Two totally different flavors right off the bat. Awesome. Completely different flavors.
What inspired you guys to it's a wheat wine, but what inspired you to try wine yeast? I mean, most people...
Why not?
Yeah, why not?
Why not? Awesome. Let's find out what happens.
Yeah. And we also put 6 pounds of honey on each one of those. So, and I'm going to tell you something. Being a beekeeper changes your perspective to brewing. When you have 100 pounds of honey that you can put into your brews, you're going to go for that big 12%, 14% thing, you know. It's right at your fingertips. There's you have no excuse not to.
Absolutely.
I agree. It's fun. I just look at those jars. They're begging to be dropped into something.
Yes.
You know, Chris, what do you think? How's beekeeping changed your brewing?
Well, I'll tell you what. Every time I brew, there's going to be a bracket comes out now. There's one more jug fermenting there, and it's a lot of fun. And I'll even throw a pound in a beer, which almost disappears, but it leaves just this hint of floral in there. Which I kind of like. I did 3 ciders, and even off the first cider, I dropped a pound of honey in. The second one was a sizer. It got like 12 pounds of honey.
That was also delicious.
Yeah.
So I tasted all the ciders. I thought, but that sizer was probably my favorite of the three that you brought.
Yeah, the sizer, it took all the tartness out
of
the apples. They were very tart apples.
Yeah, but delicious. I mean, I like the regular and the apple pie cider, but the sizer was delicious.
Yeah, I'm going to do
sizers
again.
So apple cider honey blend.
Right. That's all. And I used, believe it or not, I used a Windsor ale yeast in it.
Awesome.
Just because the ale purports itself to being allowing more of a fruitiness behind. Mm-hmm. So I said, well, let me give this a shot, see what happens.
Yep. I use a lot of English ale yeast in our when we do ciders. So awesome. So what do you think, what's your favorite benefit of like brewing with somebody else?
Well, I think brewing with Chris is great because we have no rules. There's no book. There's no, we brew what we want to brew.
Right.
And there's nothing, you know, there's no, oh, let's make a clone. No, there's no clone. You know, what do you want to make? What do we have?
What do we have? And then, you know, don't you think this should be a little toastier? Maybe we'll throw some biscuit malt in it. You know, what do you think? What do you think? What do you think? What do you think? That's the beauty of brewing with somebody. Cause it's, what do you think?
Right.
You know, I went down to, Taproom 307. I had a coffee stout the night before we brewed, and the next day I said, I went by the Dominican store, I got 6 pounds of brown sugar. I had a brown sugar coffee stout last night, we're throwing this in. And you know, he's 100% for it. That sounds good.
Yeah
Let's do it.
Awesome.
Let's try it.
And I think that's why we work so well together, is because we bounce the ideas off each other. And you know it's a partnership. It's not one person telling the other one what to do. You want to make a stout this time? Okay, then next time let's do a barley wine. And what's good about bottling everything is that those bottles are now, we have, you know, 10, 12, 14 different bottles from different batches. So you can go back and pull one of these for Christmas and pull one of these over here. And I think that's, you know, what makes it great about the bottling, because nobody wants to sit down and drink, you know, 12% pints all
right.
night.
And the other thing is, being, you know, brewing with Bobby and having a big system, we can brew 10 gallons and then split the batch again.
Right.
So now you have the freedom to have a lot more beer on hand with the same amount of effort and experiment. And say, you know, and that's what I like.
Just my 5 gallon batches, I mean, now I'm only doing like 2 and 3 gallon generally, but when I did 5 gallon batches, I would still split those up. Now, you know, they have smaller carboys. So I would encourage anyone to do that, even if you're not making 10 or 15 gallons.
And I think because we do it together, we show up at a homebrew meeting, and people expect to taste some stuff. So the beer moves, too. It's not like we're stockpiling huge amounts of beer.
No, but you know how much I have? I looked at the count today. I have 65 gallons in secondary of meat at my house. I don't even know what we have at your house. We got another 30 gallons.
Now, between that and the wine, I'm running out of room.
You know, I have some stuff at Noah's house that I did with him. I have stuff with Phil Clark that I did with him. You know, So there's a lot of stuff out there.
Yeah, I think it's awesome. Well, thank you guys so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having us, Mary.
Happy holidays to everyone out there, and Happy New Year. And I look forward to be back on the air in January 2015 for Men About It.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening. Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awele, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.